Hey everybody, it's Shaman Sister Sin. I would like to thank everybody for tuning in to the Meditations and More podcast brought to you by littleshaman.com. That's me, the Little Shaman. I'd like to let you know that if you check the information in this video, you will find a link to my recently published ebook, Surviving the Narcissist Epidemic. It's a practical narcissism survival guide that's available for free. 67 pages of practical, common sense advice. There's not a lot of psychological mumbo jumbo in there. You guys know I speak very plainly. So check it out if you get a chance, and let's jump right into it. Today I want to talk to you about something that I have spoken about before on occasion here and there, and that is the narcissist in the workplace. And I wanted to talk about it because it's something that I think does not get enough attention. And really, it needs to, because it is just as bad to work with a narcissist as it is to have one in your house. In some ways, it's worse because you can't really get away from a narcissist at the workplace. So, I mean, we've all heard a lot about relationships with pathological narcissists, but what about when the narcissist is not your significant other? What about when it's not even your friend? What about when it's someone at your job? You know, this is a very different dynamic than the family situation with a narcissist. As I said, you can't break up with or divorce a coworker, and you can't always just avoid or ignore them. Sometimes you can't get away from them at all, which is bad enough. But perhaps even worse, and one of the reasons why I wrote the Narcissist Manual, is that supervisors, HR departments, coworkers, they just don't understand what they're dealing with. This can sometimes, unfortunately, end up with the entire workplace being turned against the victim because the victim has been labeled as overly sensitive or even just a liar thanks to the narcissist smear campaigns. Victims often end up losing their jobs or quitting, but not before their reputations, their careers, and sometimes even their lives have been ruined. So let's talk about how it happens. I think probably one of the most disturbing things about narcissists in the workplace is that a lot of times, even when people can see that something isn't right, they don't say anything. They don't speak up because they don't want to be involved. That is a shame, and it's also a mistake. Because the narcissist is counting on the silence and therefore consent of other people to get away with their terrible behavior. And because people don't want to be involved, too often they get it. They get the silence and the consent that they're looking for. Narcissists can target other coworkers for smear campaigns and abuse for several different reasons. Abuse can happen when the narcissist manipulates other people into doing their work for them or taking credit for things that they didn't do. They might mock or nitpick the ideas of other people because they don't want the other person to be seen as possibly smarter or more creative than they are. They might be really petty or insubordinate. They might steal from coworkers or do things purposely to just annoy and disrupt other people. They might refuse to do their share of the work or insist that they've done more than they actually did do. They might be hostile or like really sarcastic towards people they don't feel show them enough respect. And it's important to note right here that we're not talking about real, actual respect, but the narcissist's idea of respect, which is more like, you know, kissing up to them. They're not usually very good team players, and they might sulk or refuse to participate if their ideas are not used in a group situation. You know, just things like that. They're just not pleasant people to work around at all. The real damage often comes from a smear campaign, and the smear campaigns typically work, basically the same way. A person can be targeted for a smear campaign for a lot of reasons. It could be because the narcissist wanted a particular position, but it was given to someone else. That person then potentially becomes a target of the narcissist's anger and jealousy. It may be that the narcissist simply resents anyone who has power over them and therefore, like, endeavors to destroy their supervisor's reputation. Perhaps the narcissist doesn't like the opposite sex to be in an authoritative position. It may be that the narcissist is the one in power, such as in cases where the narcissist holds a supervisory position and they mistreat the people who rank beneath them simply because, you know, they can. It could even be something as little as a coworker made a passing comment that the narcissist felt was embarrassing or disrespectful or that, you know, they just didn't like. Something that small is enough to trigger a smear campaign from a narcissist that could go on for months or even years. Because of a real or perceived slight or even just simple jealousy, the narcissist is now bound and determined to ruin this person's life. It's important to note that though there are differences in the dynamic between workplace narcissists and those in other situations, the core behavior and drive is still the same. You know, it should be remembered that though we often encounter overt narcissists in the workplace who are exceedingly concerned with appearing to be the best at their job, covert narcissists target people at their workplaces too. And so in the same way that a narcissistic partner or family member will allow the whole family, including themselves, to suffer in order to punish a loved one, narcissists in the workplace might have no problem with allowing their own job performance to suffer in order to make a coworker look bad. When they're called on the carpet for it, these narcissists will simply claim that it's the target's fault. So now that we've talked about how it happens, let's talk a little bit about what it looks like. The following story I'm going to tell you is a real example of narcissistic harassment in the workplace. The names have been changed to protect the anonymity of the victim, but she did give me permission to use this story. It's a pretty good friend of mine. So, Tony is a covert narcissist who has worked at a job for 7 years. He often slacks on the job or manipulates other people into doing his work for him. He most often does this by claiming that he can't do it for some reason. You know, he sets up situations that make him look helpless, such as claiming that he cannot tie his shoes or do simple things, and claiming that he has a disability, though he never says what it is. He was transferred to a new crew due to his poor performance and inability to get along with the people on his old crew. By the way, both of those are red flags regarding narcissism at the workplace. Since he has been transferred, he has been caught sleeping on the job or otherwise failing to perform his duties many times by his immediate supervisor, Leslie. Because of this, Tony does not like Leslie. He makes inappropriate comments to her and around her, hoping to embarrass her or make her uncomfortable. He stares at her so intently that people in the same room comment on it and are made to feel uneasy because of it. He repeatedly attempts to contact her outside of work and on her personal cell phone. When he's spoken to by supervisors about this, he does agree to stop and then begins to continuously call her on the work phone or seek her out at work, pulling her away from her job by claiming that he needs help when he actually does not need help. When Leslie reports this to their supervisors, she's told that Tony needs to be able to speak with her because she is his immediate supervisor, so there's nothing anybody can do. Leslie seeks mediation with Tony to find out what the problem is. He tells her in front of other supervisors that she does not deserve to have a position over him because he has a college degree and she is not educated enough to tell him what to do. He states flatly that he has a problem with any directives that come from her, regardless of what they are. Nothing is done about this. He's not disciplined. He continues his daily harassment. The supervisor says he will write Tony up for his poor performance, but this does not ever happen. Because he gets away with this, Tony then steps up his smear campaign against Leslie. He tells Leslie's supervisors and coworkers that she bullies him, that she sets him up for failure. He claims that she's lying about his work performance because she doesn't like him and wants him to be fired. He says she is picking on him and that she has insulted his disability. When a new employee is hired or transferred to their crew, Tony immediately tries to turn them against Leslie. Co-workers have witnessed Tony's poor work performance, as well as his tirades and his many inappropriate comments to her. It is a running joke on the crew, but no one calls Tony on his behavior, nor do they report it to a supervisor. The majority of employees find Tony creepy and unlikable, but harmless. Supervisors are required to take Tony's complaint seriously, and they're being used by him to harass Leslie. Because Tony made the complaint that Leslie made fun of his disability, he is now required to prove he has a disability with paperwork from a medical professional. He is unable to do so, and the complaint is dropped. This, coupled with his poor work performance, is supposed to be enough grounds for termination, but it doesn't happen. On the rare occasions Tony is spoken to for failing to do his job, he claims that he is unable to do his job because Leslie is mean to him, and this makes it so that he cannot concentrate. He is therefore not disciplined. Instead, more mediation attempts with various supervisors are set up. Tony controls all the conversations, turning the mediation attempts into hours-long therapy sessions where he complains about his personal problems and blames everything he's doing wrong on Leslie. Again, the supervisor says he will write Tony up for his blatant violations of operational procedure, but does not. When Leslie insists that she cannot work with Tony any longer, she is told that she's no longer permitted to speak to him. However, she still remains his immediate supervisor, and when she asks what she's supposed to do since she can't speak to him, she is told to do her job. Tony is not disciplined, he is not told to stop his harassment, nor is he advised to stay away from Leslie. Leslie begins to loathe coming to work. She has trouble sleeping, she is having to defend herself against unfounded complaints and endure constant harassment nearly every day. Because of Tony's endless litany of complaints against Leslie, employees who do not have the opportunity to witness any of the behavior begin to believe there must be some truth to what he's saying. This happens because they are unfamiliar with pathological narcissism and therefore can't understand why someone would make these things up. Leslie consistently tries to educate coworkers and supervisors about what is happening and about how Tony is manipulating people against her, but she's not taken seriously. She seeks mediation with Tony on several more occasions with other supervisors and employees in attendance, and when that fails, she attempts to discipline him for his escalating behavior and consistently poor work performance. Every time she does this, Tony claims that it is Leslie who is harassing him. For the third time, the supervisor says he will write Tony up, but does not. Because Leslie is attempting to discipline Tony and is insisting that she no longer wants to work with him because of his behavior, supervisors, including the supervisor who witnessed almost all of Tony's behavior firsthand, begin to feel sorry for Tony. They chastise Leslie for not praising or supporting Tony enough and attempt to intervene on his behalf to get her to lighten up. New employees are unnecessarily confrontational and insubordinate to her because of the lies they've been told by Tony. The employees who know Tony's complaints are nothing but harassment have grown tired of hearing it and now simply tune him out. Nobody defends Leslie or confronts Tony because they don't want to get involved or cost anybody their job, even though most of the coworkers are aware that Tony has unfairly targeted Leslie and is attempting to smear her. A new supervisor is eventually brought in just to deal with Tony so that Leslie does not have to deal with him at all. This does not stop him from continuing to call and seek her out daily, nor does it stop him from continuing to smear her to other people. Completely frustrated with the response from her supervisors, Leslie now begins to ignore Tony completely. As she continues to ignore Tony, his harassment escalates even further. He begins claiming that Leslie is sexually obsessed with him, and soon he may have to change jobs because of it. As he knows she is not permitted to speak to him, he injects himself into all of her conversations with others in an attempt to get her attention, but she continues to ignore him. The final straw comes when Leslie walks into her office to find Tony there. He suddenly falls to the floor in front of her, claiming he's ill and may also have hit his head earlier. Leslie calls the ambulance and his family as required. After he's taken to the hospital and released with absolutely nothing wrong, Leslie tells her supervisor Tony's harassment has reached a dangerous point and that if he's not fired or removed from her crew, she's going to file a lawsuit. She is told again that he has done nothing that he can be fired for. The supervisor who forgot to write Tony up three times insists he's on Leslie's side and that he's going to bat for her with HR, but that no one will listen to him. When Leslie finally speaks with HR herself to find out what the problem is, she's told that her supervisor reported a, quote, personality conflict between Leslie and Tony and that they know nothing about anything else she's talking about. In desperation at her wit's end with her immediate supervisor, Leslie finally files a formal complaint. So why did this happen? As we can see from our example, there are many stages along the way where this harassment could have been stopped if the supervisors involved knew what they were dealing with. Instead, it was treated as a joke, something that was not a big deal, and a person's career was nearly destroyed because of it. The victim's peace was definitely destroyed, and for far too long. Nobody should be put through something like this, much less for so long, with no way to get out of it. This went on for over a year. Almost 2 years. It is true that the victim in the above case should have done something sooner, but she was trying to follow a required chain of command procedure and was stonewalled by a supervisor who either did not recognize the gravity of the problem or did not care. This was compounded by the unwillingness of coworkers to get involved, even though they knew what was happening. others also took up Tony's cause because they felt sorry for him. They became what are called flying monkeys for the narcissist. These are people the narcissist uses to attack the victim by proxy. They do the narcissist's bidding, usually unknowingly, but not all the time, the way the flying monkeys in The Wizard of Oz did the Wicked Witch's bidding. The supervisor especially fell into this role. He fell into the role of counselor for Tony, allowing Tony to control all the conversations and steer them away from himself and or what he did wrong. This is a very common tactic with narcissists, and its success in this situation is another result of not being familiar with narcissism, as well as just being a terrible supervisor in general. As we can see, the supervisor also began to feel personally sorry for Tony. He chastised the victim for not praising the narcissist enough, even though he actually witnessed the narcissist's poor job performance and his repeated unfounded attacks against the victim. This is actually very common, and it is a testimony to what successful manipulators these people really are. The supervisor knew what really happened. He saw it with his own eyes, and yet somehow he still ended up feeling sorry for the narcissist and championing the narcissist's cause. This creates a situation where the victim has literally nowhere to turn. If the people who actually witness the events will not speak up or take your side, who will? This is a horrible situation that nobody should have to live through. So now that we know why it happens, how it happens, and what it looks like, let's talk about what we can do. The entire workplace becomes a battleground for the targets of narcissistic abuse because nobody wants to get involved, or worse, they take the narcissist's side. People who are targeted by narcissists feel alone, alienated, and ganged up on. This does not have to happen. You can learn how to spot narcissistic abuse. And if you see narcissistic abuse or smear campaigns in the workplace, speak up. Narcissists count on the fact that nobody will say anything to them, and every time they get away with it, the abuse gets worse. In our example, Tony's harassment of Leslie actually culminated in him physically throwing himself on the floor in front of her to get her attention. Who knows how far that could have gone? We would all want someone to speak up for us. We need to say something when we see something. We need to report these things and keep reporting them until something is done about it. It's time to stop letting these people ruin lives. After all, next time, it could be you. I hope that clears some things up for you guys. I'm looking forward to your comments and your stories. Thank you for listening to the Meditations and More podcast brought to you by LittleShaman.com. That's me, the Little Shaman. Don't forget to pick up your free copy of Surviving the Narcissist Epidemic on LittleShaman.com. May the Great Spirit bless you and have a wonderful day.